I now call the 214th meeting of the University of Civil Service Merit Board to order at 1:03 p.m. on Thursday, December 10th, 2020. We welcome those of you who will be participating in today's meeting via Cisco WebEx and request that you mute yourself until it is appropriate for you to speak. We also welcome those of you who are listening to the meeting. For the record, I will note that we are holding this meeting by means of video conference and teleconference in compliance with Executive Order 20-7, as extended and amended by Executive Orders 20-33, 2020-44, 2020-48, and 2020-71, which states, during the duration of the gubernatorial disaster proclamation, the provisions of the Open Meeting Act 5 ILCS 120, requiring or relating to in-person attendance by members of a public body are suspended. Specifically, one, requirement in 5 ILCS 122.01 that members of the public body must be physically present is suspended. And two, the condition is of 5 ILCS 127 limiting when remote participation is permitted is suspended. I note for the record that the agenda for this meeting was posted in accordance with the Open Meetings Act. The posted agenda included the directions on how to access this meeting. Next on the agenda is the roll call.
Dr. Butler. Dr. Sanales Candido.
Present.
Mr. Dively.
Here.
Dr. Eagle.
Yes.
Ms. Jacobson.
Here.
Ms. Jones.
Present.
Dr. King. Ms. Lang.
Present.
Mr. Simmons.
Here.
Ms. Smart.
Here.
Ms. Zopp.
Present.
I'm sorry, Teresa, could you hear Ms. Lang? She was on earlier, and I don't know.
Yes, she's.
Oh, did you hear her?
Yes.
Okay, I couldn't hear her. Thank you.
I'm back in case you call my name.
Dr. King, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, because I thought that I didn't hear you, but I saw you were present. Did you get that, Teresa?
I got it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, my thing stopped for a minute.
Teresa, do we have a quorum?
We have a quorum.
Thank you. You have before you the agenda for today's meeting. May I please have a motion and a second to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
I'm sorry. I have a motion by
Jill Smart.
By Ms. Smart. And then I have a second by
John Simmons.
Okay, by Mr. Simmons. All those in favor signify by aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? The agenda is approved. Next on the agenda is item three, which is public comments. In accordance with policy, the Merit Board will allow public comments and questions during a public meeting. The Merit Board will accept copies of speakers' presentations, questions, and other relevant written material. Is there anyone that wishes to make public comment at this time?
Chair Jones, this is Jeff Brownfield. If I could interrupt just for a moment.
Yes,
President Scott from Chicago State University was going to try and attend today, but was unfortunately not able to attend. And so even though we have that on your agenda that she may potentially participate, she is not going to be able to participate. We did receive one other notice from a representative from the University of Illinois Chicago, Matt Jones, and we are unsure if Mr. Jones is. Okay. Mr. Jones is on, and so I will turn it back to you, Ms. Chair, but those are the only two requests we had to potentially present during public comments.
Okay, thank you, Executive Director Brownfield. I'm sorry, Mr. Jones, are you presenting today during public comments?
Yes, I would actually like to present regarding the discharge matter set for today.
Okay, let's see. Not sure. We talked about that, so I'm not sure it would be more appropriate. If you're okay with that, can we hold off on your comment and you make those comments during the discharge?
Yeah, I think that makes more sense.
Is that okay, Dr. Brownfield?
Yes, that's fine. We can we can certainly do that based on your recommendation, Chair. There's no problem in doing that from our end.
Okay, that might make more sense. Any of the other board members, do you have a preference? Is it okay if that goes where it's the subject matter it's pertaining to?
Yeah, makes sense.
I see some head nods and thumbs up, so we'll keep moving. Next on the agenda is item 5, which is the consideration of the minutes from the previous meeting. You had before you the minutes of the 213th meeting of the Merit Board, which was held on August 13th, 2020. May I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of the 213th meeting of the Merit Board, which was held on August 13th, 2020?
So before you do that, may I ask a question?
I'm sorry. Sure thing. Thank you.
Yes,
ma'am.
So before we approve them, and these are, you know, maybe I'm being too picky, but there were a couple of probably things that just to, you know, correct. They might be typos.
Okay, please proceed.
All right. On page 2 of the minutes, near the bottom, consideration of the 22 budget recommendations. The first paragraph, Mr. Brownfield gave an overview of the budget process, noting that they office was asking. So it should be the office, probably. Right.
Okay.
They were probably office. Going back and forth between they were asking and the office.
Their office.
Yes.
And then the next to the last line in that same paragraph, the office would also like to see reestablish. So maybe C doesn't belong there.
Thank you.
I feel like I'm really being picky, but I do this for another organization, and these are pointed out to me if I...
We appreciate it. Thank you.
So on the next page, page 3, under update and action, Mr. Brownfield stated that paragraph, or in fact, the end of that sentence, employee advisors and some union representative, I assume that should be plural.
You're good.
Is there anything else, Director Jacobson?
I'm sorry to be so picky.
No, fine. Thank you.
Anything else? I think you went back on mute. Ms. Jacobson, is that all for you?
I'm sorry. I thought I said that's all.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else have any other changes to the minutes from the last meeting? Okay, we have a motion by Ms. Smart. Do we have a second?
Second.
Yes.
We have a second by Dr. Eagle. All those in favor of approving the minutes from the last meeting with the indicated corrections?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes of the 213th meeting of the Merit Board held on August 13th, 2020 are approved as corrected, or as corrected. The next thing on the agenda is item 5, which is the consideration of the discharge proceedings number UIC 2013 filed against Vincent Bradford by the University of Illinois at Chicago. The Merit Board is here to adopt the decision and order deciding this matter. Executive Director Brownfield or Council, Tyser, do you all have any comments at this time, or you want to kind of chime in here?
Yes, and so I think in Gail, since we moved that, I think Mr. Jones probably needs to speak prior to your announcement of the case. Would that be correct for his public comments? Since we moved that, his public comments to now, would he not speak now prior to us presenting the case, or am I getting it backwards?
It'll give the Merit Board more context if I
put
the intro in first.
That's a much better solution. Thank you.
And just to be clear, I'm having a little bit of a challenge hearing Gail. So,
yeah, if everyone could mute because it's terrible. I can't hear anything.
Okay, you're
ready?
Thank you.
The University of Illinois at Chicago, UIC, filed written charges for discharge against Vincent Bradford on July 28, 2020. Mr. Bradford, a human resources associate, was initially appointed on August 19, 2012. Mr. Bradford made a timely request for a discharge hearing. UIC filed five charges against Mr. Bradford. One, failure to meet College of Education expectations regarding communication concerns regarding his ability or inability to work, failure to comply with departmental order to return to work, unauthorized absences, unapproved absences in excess of 30 days, and failure to communicate with the College of Education for more than 30 days while not on an approved leave. There was no prior discipline by UIC related to Mr. Bradford. The hearing record shows the following. In January 2020, Loretta Casey, Associate Dean for Administration at the UIC College of Education, and Alfred Tatum, Dean of the College of Education, determined that the college would hire a human resources associate. During January 2020, Mr. Bradford was interviewed for the open HR associate position at the College of Education. In February 2020, Mr. Bradford was offered the HR associate position. The College of Education and Mr. Bradford agreed that Mr. Bradford would begin his new position on March 23, 2020. On March 20th, Mr. Bradford emailed Loretta Casey, who was to be his supervisor, and indicated that, quote, due to matters of a personal nature, close quote, Mr. Bradford would not be at work on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, March 23, 24, and 25. In another email sent later on March 20, Mr. Bradford requested administrative leave through April 2, 2020. University policy states that administrative leave requested by Mr. Bradford, quote, allows administrators the opportunity of a paid leave of absence to stay abreast of developments in their profession, which will in turn enhance the university environment. On April 2, in response to Mr. Bradford's request for administrative leave, Dean Tatum emailed Mr. Bradford indicating that Dean Tatum was reluctant to grant the request for leave without further discussion. In that same email, Dean Tatum instructed Mr. Bradford to let Dean Tatum know if Bradford would not be able to report to work by the next day, April 3rd. Mr. Bradford never responded to that email. Mr. Bradford's request for leave was not granted by the College of Education. On April 8, 2020, Dean Tatum emailed a letter to Mr. Bradford informing Mr. Bradford that his absences beginning on March 23rd were considered by UIC to be unexcused, unauthorized, and unpaid. That same April 8th letter ordered Mr. Bradford to report to work by April 13th. Mr. Bradford never started the HR associate position at the College of Education and did not report to work at the college. Mr. Bradford did not respond to Dean Tatum's April 8th email and letter. The College of Education received no communication from Mr. Bradford for the next 60 days. During the hearing, Mr. Bradford testified that he was incarcerated between March 2, 2020 and April 17, 2020. He also stated that he believes he should have been offered the opportunity to work remotely. The hearing officer, Michael Dudek, found that the employer, UIC, met its burden of proof on charges 1, 2, and 3 against Mr. Bradford, but that the university failed to meet its burden of proof as to charges 4 and 5. That's all I have. Yes. Mr. Jones, would you care to present?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks. So if there's one thing that I really want to emphasize to you today about this matter, it's that the employment relationship between Vincent Bradford and UIC is well beyond repair. Mr. Bradford was supposed to start a job as an HR associate with the UIC College of Education on March 23rd. The Friday before his start date, Mr. Bradford emailed the associate dean of the college asking for 2 weeks of administrative leave pursuant to a policy that didn't even apply to him. Mr. Bradford then failed to communicate with anyone at UIC for 59 days thereafter. With respect to the request for administrative leave, the dean of the college responded to Mr. Bradford's email and told him that he was reluctant to grant the request until they could have further discussion. However, that discussion never took place because, as already stated, no one from UIC heard anything from Mr. Bradford for at least 59 days. After waiting 2 weeks, the dean sent Mr. Bradford an email message asking that he provide an update on his availability to begin employment with the college. Mr. Bradford never responded to that email. The dean continued to email and make other attempts to reach Mr. Bradford over the ensuing month, but received no response. After waiting 34 days after Mr. Bradford's last communication with UIC, the college finally filed the initial set of written charges for discharge against Mr. Bradford. Still not hearing from Mr. Bradford, the college proceeded to hire an individual by the name of Dasha Miner for the HR associate position. Ms. Miner had interviewed for the position at the same time as Mr. Bradford, and the college thought she was a good candidate. 59 days after his last communication with UIC, Mr. Bradford finally responded to an email the dean had sent him 32 days earlier. In doing so, Mr. Bradford made no attempt to apologize for the lack of communication and made several legalistic arguments contesting his discharge. Of course, none of these arguments addressed a complete failure to communicate in any capacity for 59 days. Mr. Bradford's main argument actually focused on a procedural issue under the civil service rules, which require that discharge paperwork be delivered to the employee's most recent physical address on file with the employer. Mr. Bradford had manually changed his physical address in the university's electronic record system shortly before the situation came about. When sending Mr. Bradford the discharge paperwork, the university used a physical address that was arguably not the most recent address on file. While it's undisputed that Mr. Bradford received the notice of intent to discharge and various other documents through email, email is not a recognized form of service under the civil service rules. While the initial set of written charges for discharge were physically delivered to and signed by a Letisa Bradford, Mr. Bradford argued that they were not served in strict accordance with the rules. Now, the university eventually withdrew the initial set of written charges for discharge and went back to square one of the discharge process, which, of course, caused some confusion and took some time. When the hearing finally occurred, Mr. Bradford refused to even testify or call any witnesses. Of course, there were many things that were not covered in the findings of fact. First, although Mr. Bradford did not initially disclose this.
Mr. Jones, I'm sorry.
Yes.
You're speaking under public comment, so you have approximately 30 seconds. Thank you.
Okay, of course. So Mr. Bradford did not initially disclose this. We do acknowledge that he had been incarcerated for a period of time. Mr. Bradford acknowledged being able to communicate through email during his incarceration. And more importantly, it's undisputed that he was released before the university held any sort of pre-disciplinary hearing conference and well before it filed written charges for discharge against him. In fact, during the hearing, Mr. Bradford plainly admitted that he waited at least a month after being released to make contact with UIC. The university did not seek Mr. Bradford's discharge while he was incarcerated or because of his arrest. Secondly, Mr. Bradford had actually worked at the UIC College of Dentistry for a period of time prior to being hired in the College of Education. While working in the College of Dentistry, Mr. Bradford became incarcerated and was able to use 3 weeks of paid vacation time while in jail. Simply keeping Mr. Bradford on vacation leave indefinitely when there was no communication from him, even a month after he ceased being incarcerated, would be irresponsible of UIC and in violation of its own policies. The college made a reasonable decision. Of course, the college made a reasonable decision to move forward with a different candidate after waiting on Mr. Bradford for well over a month. Under these circumstances, UIC College of Education does not deserve to not only be forced to reinstate Mr. Bradford.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. We appreciate you.
I have a question. Comments. If I might. Mr. Jones, are you representing the university or you are speaking as an individual? I didn't catch that. Could you let me know?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was trying to get as much in as I could with the 5 minute limit. So I am legal counsel for the University of Illinois Chicago campus.
Thank
Is
you.
It possible that we could make a motion to allow him extra time to finish his position?
Well, and normally we have counsel be able to speak not as part of the public time. I'm confused.
Yeah.
If I may, counsel did not request to speak. He did not file the appropriate motion to speak to the board. He filed a request to speak under public comment.
Okay. I would still like to have us hear him, though, in the interest of hearing.
30 more seconds. I had prepared this to be 5 minutes, so I'm surprised that I did it over and over again to make sure it was within the 5 minute limit.
I can certainly, I was on mute so that we couldn't have the background noise. If it is the pleasure of the board, I'm sure that we can allow some extra time. Is that correct, Director?
Yes.
Executive Director Brownfield?
Yes, yeah. Certainly, as a board, you certainly can. It seems like at least there were two or three that certainly spoke positively of that. So unless there is some other objection from other board members that may go as far as needing some kind of motion, I would think, Chair, it's probably appropriate to allow, you know, Mr. Jones another, you know, minute, 90 seconds, you know, whatever might be appropriate.
If there is anyone who objects to allowing Mr. Jones any additional time, can you please indicate? And if no one indicates, we'll go ahead and proceed. Okay, seeing none, you can go ahead, counsel.
Thank you. All right, so under these circumstances, the UIC College of Education does not deserve to not only be forced to reinstate Mr. Bradford with back pay, but also now pay the salaries of two HR associates when it made a practical decision to hire someone else at a time when it had no reason to believe that it would ever hear from Mr. Bradford again. The employer's witnesses in this case each have been with the university for more than 20 years, and their decision should not be second-guessed by this board. Doing so would be a slap in the face to the very leaders employed by the university to handle personnel matters like this. There should be no question over a month of recurring unauthorized absences with no communication whatsoever amounts to just cause for discharge. If you say that it doesn't, you're sending a troubling message to universities that they shouldn't even bother trying to enforce their own rules because their decisions, even if reasonable, don't really matter. For these reasons, I emphatically implore you all not to reinstate this employee. This employment relationship between the parties is truly irreconcilable and beyond repair. Thank you for giving me the extra time to speak.
Thank you, counsel. Executive Director Brownfield, board counsel, I'm following your direction about how you would like for us to proceed at this point.
My suggestion, Madam Chair, is that someone make a motion, and at which point you can can request discussion.
Thank you. I didn't know if we had anybody else ready to present and we need any more materials, anything else. So do we have a motion from any of the board members with regard to this matter before us now, the discharge for Mr. Bradford?
Wait, a motion for what? Like for a decision or for a discussion?
Do you have right now at this point a motion for a decision?
I do not.
Okay. I do. Okay.
So my question is: do I make a motion that this person's appeal be denied, or do we just can't motion that he be terminated? I mean, this is his last appeal, right?
Counsel.
He can still go to court.
Thank you.
Okay.
So at this moment.
Then I motion that his.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dr. King. Can you give us just a minute? Let Gail.
Sure, sorry.
She's going to say because someone else might need to hear this.
Yes, ma'am.
Let me answer. That's okay. Let me answer Dr. King's question. The university at this moment is seeking the discharge of Vincent Bradford. That would be one of the available motions for the board to make. One of the other available motions is to reinstate him. The third available motion to the board is to reinstate him with some suspension between 3 and 120 days.
I got it. Okay. So my motion is that we approve the university's discharge.
This is Joe Dagley. I second that motion.
Can we not have any discussion?
I'll have the discussion.
Motion first, then the discussion.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
So that's where we're coming. We have a motion from Dr. King to discharge. We have a second by Mr. Dively. Is that correct? Was that Mr. Dively?
Yep.
Okay. Do we have any discussion? And I hear Ms. Smart requesting discussion. Ms. Smart?
So I don't necessarily disagree, but I think if any individual comes to us, it at least warrants some discussion of the logic of what we're going to do. And, you know, my logic is that a couple of points. Based on the timeline, as I saw it, right, he was in jail from March 2nd to April 17th. And I hope I have the dates right. But yet on March 20th, that was the day that he asked for the administrative leave. So in my view, and then there was no more communication. So saying that he didn't necessarily get, you know, the communication or the discharge paper or whatever, if he was somehow able to communicate with us on March 20th, why was he not able to communicate with us on any other, you know, during any other part of this process? So that was my logic, because at first, if he was gone and he didn't hear anything, he couldn't communicate, that might be one thing. But he clearly somehow was able to communicate while incarcerated on March 20th. So that's how I got to the fact that if he didn't communicate anything else, then it's a problem. The second thing, he is an HR professional. And if an HR professional doesn't know, right, the process or the right thing to do, even if he doesn't understand the procedure, he certainly knows that an employer needs to be communicated with, even if it's through somebody else. I do believe that if we're sending discharge papers, I know that you said that somebody else, I don't know if it was a spouse or a family member, signed off for it. I would suggest that we absolutely change that so no one can sign off on discharge papers other than the individual. That, because that person could just throw them away. So that's a risk for us. And then I was surprised that counsel didn't know or chose not to ask to speak as part of the proceeding here today versus the public comment. So that's something that, you know, in the future should be sorted out as well. Those were my only comments.
And I would like to chime in too, Ms. Smart. Thank you for your comments. The one thing I will say about service and the general acceptance of service, I think that the policy of being able to serve, and that follows the current policy just with court documents. If there's someone at the property that's over a certain age that answers the door at that property, that counts for service. So I just want to make sure that we're clear on that, that most of the times if it's somebody over the age of 13 that answers the door at the property, it puts the responsibility on the person, not on the person who's giving the service.
But we might want to consider, I mean, unless we are forced to follow that law.
I just wanted to ask that might be why it's like that, because that's a generally accepted policy for service.
Thank you.
If somebody answers your door and they get court papers, they should know to give them to you.
I mean, otherwise it would be very easy to avoid service.
And it's difficult enough to get service, honestly.
I really appreciate you explaining that. Is it Dr. Jones? I apologize. You sound like a judge. So
please don't claim that. No, it's just here, Jones is fine. Even Julie is even better.
All right. Well, yeah, I think that what you brought up is this is the usual and customary way for the world to work. So
yeah.
Thank you.
But I do appreciate, Ms. Smart, you adding that in and adding some context to why you made the decision that you made. While that's not required for us to do as a board, sometimes that's helpful for people to understand that we put much time into these considerations and we don't just sign off on them blindly one way or the other. Each of us probably spent many hours working on this particular one because of the volumes of information we receive. So thank you.
I mean, these are our employees and we need to give them fair time.
Correct.
Okay.
So I have something.
Okay. Please, Dr. Eagle.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Ms. Lang. We heard you. Dr. Eagle is going to go next and then you can go next, Ms. Lang. We are having some difficulty hearing you, but I saw your box turn blue. So after Dr. Eagle, you'll be next, Ms. Lang.
Thank you. I do want to ask, because this particular individual had already been an employee at one point at U of I and there was an issue then, there is a question for me about the fact that there was a feeling that this was not going to be an expectation or an issue that was going to come up again. And yet you made the employment decision, which, I mean, I think there's an honor to having the decision made again, but it shouldn't be a total surprise that if the action had happened at one point at the university in another department, why it wouldn't happen again. Now, I know that has nothing to do with the dismissal case, but it may or may not, because could there have been an opportunity to have not put this person in this situation at all, considering you took the second person anyway, and allowed them to take on the position. So there should have been two equally qualified candidates, one of which had already been tested by the university and had issues, the other not, and you chose to take the path that led to the issue of the employee.
I think Dr. Eagle and again, counsel or others can correct me. I think what might be that you're getting at there is a little bit of I guess I'll say confusion a little bit with the timeline. The second employee that ended up being selected was after the problem, if you will, that came about with Mr. Bradford. So Mr. Bradford, in essence, they had a series of interviews. There were two good candidates. Mr. Bradford was initially deemed the best of the two. Well, they may have had 10 candidates, I don't know. But I'm just saying, at least of the two that are somewhat interchanged here, involved a little bit in this particular situation, initially Mr. Bradford was selected. It was after that then the second employee, if you will, or the second candidate, my term, was then brought in. So it might just be the timeline there that is, again, I know we send you lots of documents and there's lots of timelines, and so that might be what you are referencing there. And I apologize if I'm misunderstanding your question.
I guess what I was trying to say is it looked like there were two qualified candidates, one that already had an issue, and I think it was a dental school, the other,
that's where the timeline confusion is. Mr. Bradford had not had discipline prior. That's what I'm saying about the timeline, I think, that there was not an issue in his previous employment, correct, Gail?
If I may?
Yes, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Dr. Eagle, for any confusion. There was no prior discipline of Mr. Bradford. As far as we know, and going beyond that, there was, you know, all there is speculation. We do know that Mr. Bradford took a vacation between the time he left the dental school and the time he was supposed to begin at the College of Education. But there was no, as far as we know, there was no previous incident of this kind or any prior discipline of Mr. Bradford by the university.
That happened already after his hiring. If there's anything, right, that controversy, the period where he right. took vacation, that happened after he had already been hired correct. For this position.
Okay. So now I am confused because I thought that, but I thought Mr. Jones indicated that there had been a prior problem at the dental school as well. I'm sorry.
No.
I don't think that was reflected in the record. I think that was at the end of his tenure in the dental school.
And it was a granted leave by the dental school.
I don't see. Oh, yes, she is still. Is that all, Dr. Eagle? Do you have anything else?
No, I guess I am still confused. So the issue of the vacation came under the auspices of the dental school.
Correct. He started vacation leave.
And that's okay. All right. So whatever. Okay.
I thought what I heard was that it was not a disciplinary issue, that there was not something, it was just related to time off and vacation versus administrative leave, but because of a personal issue, not because of any disciplinary action, not because of any action warranting discipline in the dental school. Because it was clear in the material, there were no discipline actions against him prior to this.
Correct. And I think what may have happened is, I know we're hearing some language and we're not speaking anything that's not in the record about incarceration. So that vacation may have been related to that, but that time off might have been related to that, but it wasn't a disciplinary action from the dental school.
Could we ask Mr. Jones to articulate? I know what I read, but then when I heard Mr. Jones speak, I thought I heard something different, but perhaps not. Could he clarify that?
Mr. Jones?
Yeah, sure. So the prior discipline, to be clear, I'm unaware of any prior discipline. It wasn't even taken into consideration with this situation, because this wasn't really a progressive disciplinary issue. With respect to the vacation leave, he was arrested while working in the College of Dentistry, and he might have had a pre-planned vacation or something, but for whatever reason, he got the 3 weeks of vacation while he was incarcerated prior to, and then while he was still in the College of Dentistry, and then he was starting this new job and kind of like asking for more time. And in the College of Education you're starting a new job to ask for time off right away, and So they viewed it a little bit differently, but the vacation, there was no prior discipline. It's not, that's none of that is relevant. It's,
Okay, so he he requested the vacation through the College of Dentistry.
Right.
He had, well, and during this vacation, his entitled vacation, he was already then, I'm sorry, I'm really screwing up the timeline. He was already then employed by the College of Education.
Yeah, he had been hired by the College of Education at some time in February, and then he was arrested on March 2nd, and then from March 2nd until his time with the college of, when he was going to start with the College of Education, he was incarcerated, but was being paid while incarcerated. So one of the arguments he had brought up is that he should just assumed he was on vacation, and so I just wanted to address that. We did give him 3 weeks while he was incarcerated. I mean, that, you know, we really shouldn't just be keeping somebody on vacation under these circumstances where there's no communication or anything.
Okay, thank you, Counsel Jones. Is there anything else, Dr. Eagle? So he hadn't started yet, but he had already been hired. And so his vacation was still under the College of Dentistry.
Right.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm trying to follow my little blue boxes. Ms. Lang, you had chimed in. Do you have any questions or comments?
No, it was answered in that dialogue.
Got okay. It. Thank you. Any other questions, comments, concerns before we entertain and vote on the motion?
Could the motion be restated?
Yes, I will, because we've had a lot of dialogue since then. So we have a motion that the employee be discharged per the university's request. And we had the motion was by Dr. King, and the second was Mr. Dively. All those in favor, signify by aye. And actually, I think we may benefit.
Sure. Ms. Jones.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
We need a roll call on this.
I was just about to say that before I saw a lot of blue circles chiming in. Because everyone's face is not visible. Everybody's blue is not visible. So are you going to take care of that, Teresa, for us calling the roll?
I will start the roll call.
Thank
Dr.
you.
I just wondered if we were going to hear from the employee before we made the decision.
He did not. Ms. Lang, he had an opportunity to ask to speak in front of the board, and he did not as well. And he did not ask to speak in public comment. So we cannot fill in the blanks for him, unfortunately. He had that option available, and he was aware of it.
Okay, thank you.
Teresa?
Dr. King?
Yes, ma'am.
It's for your vote.
Oh, yes.
Ms. Lang?
Yes.
Mr. Simmons?
Yes.
Ms. Smart?
Yes.
Ms. Zop?
Yes, sorry, I was muted.
Dr. Savalas Kandu?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Dr. Eagle?
Yes.
Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Ms. Jones.
Yes.
Yes, okay. So the motion carried.
Thank you, Teresa. The next, so we have the motion carried on that. Thank you, Mr. Jones, for taking time out today, Council, to present to the board. We appreciate your feedback, so thank you, and answering our questions that we had. I'm looking for Gail, Council, Board Council, and Executive Director. We've closed this matter. We're moving on to the next item on the agenda.
That is correct.
So,
the next item is the presentation by the HR directors.
Okay, so yes, next on the agenda is item 6, which is a report of the Human Resources Director Advisory Committee.
Good afternoon, members of the Merit Board, System Office staff, HR colleagues, and Employee Advisory Committee representatives. My name is Amelia Hartnett, and I am the Director of Human Resources at Western Illinois University. I'm pleased to address you today on behalf of my colleagues who comprise the Human Resource Director's Advisory Committee. HR DAC works directly with the systems office staff on matters relevant to our campuses and employees. Since your last meeting, We have continued to collaboratively work on ongoing projects with the systems office and each other. As you can imagine, the issues at the forefront of our work together revolve around our changing workforce circumstances due to the pandemic. Many of the institutions declared the pandemic an emergency and requested a suspension of rules in an emergent or catastrophic situation with the systems office. Jeff and his staff provided prompt explanations and instructions and were extremely easy to work with to process the declarations. They have provided continual guidance that has enabled the effective institutions the ability to make quick hires to assist with the emergency without following the normal appointment provisions and to reassign existing employees where the need was greatest. As you know, the systems office also worked to have an emergency rule approved by JCAR, enabling probationary periods to be extended beyond their normal length during stay-at-home orders and alternative work arrangements, though this rule expired September 6th. These actions were key to allowing us to respond to ongoing human resource issues under swiftly changing circumstances. We also appreciate that the systems office has proceeded with our audit schedule in the midst of the pandemic by converting to a remote format. I can personally attest to the ease with which audits are being conducted in this new way, as WIU went through a remote audit just last month. 2020 has brought our society and campuses to a long overdue, renewed, and more passionate commitment to diversity, inclusion, and equity. We anticipate continuing to collaborate with the systems office and each other on how we can find ways to share ideas and support common initiatives aimed at increasing the diversity and equity of our employee populations and experiences. It is now clear that the pandemic will have an ongoing and profound impact on higher education and our workforce management. As we look to the future, our work with you, the systems office, and the Employee Advisory Committee is more crucial than ever. We are concerned with keeping applicants and human resource personnel safe while operating within a system that has in-person examination components. We hope to continue discussions on what constitutes an exam and modernization efforts with the systems office. We anticipate a continual increase in remote work arrangements in the future. This will put pressure on out-of-state recruitment and the preference to Illinois residents portion of the statute. Working within the 900-hour limit for temporary work has also been a challenge during the pandemic and will continue to be a point of concern in uncertain budgetary circumstances due to a reluctance to hire permanent positions. As in the past, we anticipate pressure and uncertainty surrounding state appropriations, only exacerbated by the pandemic. Our fee revenues are significantly down, and outside revenue sources are taking a hit as well. We will be challenged to maintain our efficiency, functionality, and productivity by our campuses, all of which will be severely negatively impacted by staff reductions, furloughs, or other personnel cost-saving measures as a result of uncertain funding. The civil service bumping process and resulting staff displacements cause additional disruption to our operations. We must find ways to remove the obstacles that prevent us from attracting and retaining the best employees for our institutions. This can be accomplished by taking what we have learned from 2020 and the concerns we have with the structures in place and creatively working together to come up with the best way forward in this changing environment. This has been an incredibly rough year for us all, but we can find a way to come through it stronger together. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today and for your service as members of the Merit Board.
Thank you, Ms. Hartnett, for your presentation today. Members of the board, does anyone have any questions or comments for Ms. Hartnett? Thank you again for presenting to us today. We appreciate whenever anyone comes before the board and gives us some additional information. So thank you for taking time out this afternoon. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is agenda item number 7, which is the report of the State University Employees Advisory Committee. I believe that report is going to be presented by the chair, Jill Odom. Ms. Odom. I see Ms. Odom Square, but it is muted right now, so I'm not sure if you are speaking and muted.
I was muted. Thank you. good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
As Chair Jones mentioned, my name is Jill Odom. I am the chair of the State University Civil Service Employee Advisory Committee and an employee at the University of Illinois Urbana campus. On behalf of the State University's Advisory Committee, I'd like to thank you for your time and your commitment to our universities. It's very valued and we appreciate it. It has been quite a while since we've had the opportunity to speak with you. At our last report was submitted and conveyed to you by Director Brownfield on May 14th, that Merit Board meeting, so it has been a while. I appreciate the opportunity for today. At that time, we were hopeful that we would be able to meet in person for our quarterly July meeting. However, as we are all starkly aware, in-person meetings were not advisable for most able for most people. Though the pandemic has continued to hamper our ability to follow the statutes and our own policies and procedures, we have adapted as best we can and met via Zoom for our July and October meetings. Tomorrow, our executive committee will meet to set the dates for our 2021 meetings, which will most likely have us meeting electronically for our January meeting. Our plan after that is to return to in-person as required for our April meeting, external forces willing. As employees, we continue to adapt to these constantly changing and difficult times and the additional demands that are being made on all of us. The efforts of all of our staff, administrators, faculty, and students at our universities are an example of how creative, adaptable, inventive, and supportive we are to each other, our communities, the state, and beyond. We all find ourselves making shifts in our work and personal schedules and priorities. How we addressed simple, routine tasks 9 to 10 months ago are completely different today. With regards to our students, how we serve them meals, advise them via phone or Zoom for face-to-face conferences about their schedules, course choices, financial aid. With regard to how we support ourselves, our FNS staff have stringent safety and cleaning protocols, which are performed more often and on different schedules than in the past. Routine maintenance in occupied office space has its challenges as the office is occupied or is the staff working remotely. So we've had to make changes in this new world we work in, and our staff are adapting. The ever-present question is, if I'm working remotely, when can I return to campus? If we're an essential worker and have worked on campus since the start, when will things slow down? There are no answers, but all this is to say we continue to do our best and appreciate the support of our universities. Before I close, I wanted to let you know that we continue to work on several items as a committee with Director Brownfield, much like HRDAC does. We will meet in person in 2021. We are certain of that. And we look forward to the opportunity for you to join us at one of our quarterly meetings. As we meet in your area of the state, we will reach out with a personal invitation for you to join any portion of our meeting. But in the meantime, please know that we value your input and look forward to strengthening our relationships. Thank you for your time. And if you have any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Odom. Members of the Mayor Board, anyone have any questions or comments for Ms. Odom? Again, thank you so much for taking your time to come to speak to us today or come virtually to speak to us today. I echo your comments. We've all had to do things a lot differently. No one probably expected that we would be doing this so long, but I appreciate your closing of hopefulness that sometime in 2021, we will get back to something that is more closely resembled to what our normal used to be. So thank you for that, Ms. Odom. Next we have on the agenda is agenda item number 8, which is the update on the adoptive rulemaking to section 2050.110 of the code, 80 IL administrative code, section 250.110. I believe, is that going to be Gail presenting on that? Hello?
Oops. There we go. Oops. I'm sorry. Sorry, Chair. We muted ourselves. I apologize for that. I'm sure Gail will have some things to add, but I wanted to I wanted to add just a couple of things for the board, and just to kind of remind everybody. And you know, we obviously work with this, you know, day after day, and obviously all of you have, you know, very different focuses for your career. So I wanted to give just a real brief, you know, kind of 30-second review of what has happened over this last, really kind of this year, and just to kind of remind everybody how this process has to work. So as everybody is aware, we obviously have a state statute that one of the provisions, it's actually 36-0, is titled Demotion, Removal, and Discharge. And so within that section, it talks about the generalities of how you would discharge somebody, which would have been what happened just a few minutes ago when we discharged Mr. Bradford through that process, all right? And so based on the statute then, what we have done here most recently, and the rule that you have and the rule that you have seen now, I think this is maybe the fourth meeting. This is the first time you've seen it without what appears to be hundreds of markups on it, okay, is the work that in particular Gail has done to revise the rule in concert with the HR directors and with the EAC group. So we have the statute, which sits kind of up on the top, if you will, and then we have administrative rules that then formulate how that statute is to be enforced. And so one of the things, just as a quick example, one of the things is the statute says that if somebody is being discharged, they are allowed 15 days to request a hearing. All right, so within the rule then, we obviously have to conform to that 15 days. So the rule can't say we're only going to give you 2 days, because the statute indicates, the statute again that's obviously passed by the General Assembly, signed by the governor, indicates that you will have 15 days, or the employee will have 15 days to do that. So in addition then to the statute, again, kind of, you know, being at the top of the heap, if you will, the administrative rules, which also carry the weight of law, we also then have procedures to go along with that. And again, once again, as you, Chair Jones, and your colleagues have heard today, some of the things we discussed were, you know, the procedures, carrying on the hearing. How do we do that? How do we actually go about doing so? And frankly, we've been a little bit chided from JCAR, which is the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, a legislative committee, that we have too many procedures and we need, frankly, more rules. So we have kind of staved off a little bit on some of those requests. But nonetheless, that's kind of the order. So I just wanted to kind of remind everybody that that's how this process works. And that's why, you know, we do come back to you, to the board. We do go to our HR directors, again, to our EAC members, to our union representatives, depending on the particular situation, as we revise these rules. You know, under that same banner, if you will, I know both Jill and Amelia discussed out-of-state recruitment, for example. Well, once again, in our statute right now, the statute says exams are open to residents of Illinois. Actually, a few years ago, when we went to have some updates to our statute, which we were able to get passed through the assembly and through and the governor's signature, we tried to get that changed. At the time, it was not looked favorably upon. We have a new world, okay? We all obviously understand. We've talked about it continually. We have a new world today than we did approximately 4 years ago when we were doing that process. So there may be some other opportunities to have our legislative folks revisit that part of our statute and maybe make some changes to that, and then obviously the rules and things that would flow from that. So all of the things, as we talk with you all, and again, I only bring this up because, as I said, we deal with this all the time. And I think there's sometimes we skip over this and we forget that you all don't deal with this every single day. This is not what your job functions are, is we will look at anything that we have in our rules, and we will certainly work, as Amelia said, as Jill said, we will certainly work with, you know, all of our groups to make sure that we update our system as we can. But there needs to be an understanding as well that the things that we have and the things that flow from that are statutorily based. And we cannot just make a change because it's inconvenient. There's a lot of the things that we have that may be inconvenient. I have no problems making changes to them, but we need assistance and partnership and help from our campuses to do so. We have a couple local representatives, a couple local senators who have been very open, not only to help us with our budget, but open to our past change to our statute a few years ago. However, I can tell you all, an absolute certainty, at least at that point in time, they were adamantly opposed to out-of-state recruitment. Adamantly opposed to the fact that their staff said, Jeff, if you put that in your bill, I can guarantee you it will fail. In fact, I can guarantee you it probably won't even get to the floor for a vote. So again, I don't want to, I just want to have everybody to understand when we have parts of the statute, we're happy to look at them. There may be need some changes to them, but we're going to need some help from obviously those of you that are on the board, and obviously then from your presidents, from your chancellors, from your government relation folks or whatever, to build a consensus to make whatever the change might be that is important for your campus at this particular time. And so I appreciate Amelia bringing that up. I appreciate Jill bringing it up. I appreciate the other discussions we've had on that. I probably shouldn't have my mask off, so I'll go back to that. But I did, but I did want to make sure that everybody understood that's how the process works. And that's how we got to this, you know, to the new rule that we have. And again, I appreciate Gail's work on doing that. Gail, did you have anything in particular that maybe you wanted to address for the chair about anything in particular about the rule? Or obviously, again, the chair or other members may have questions for us, but.
Thank you, I don't. You all have seen this several times. It's final, and we just informed universities that they need to begin processing new discharge matters under the new rule. Beyond that, I have nothing new to add.
Thank you, Gail. Does anyone on the board have any questions or concerns for either our executive director or our board counsel regarding this matter?
No, ma'am.
As Gail mentioned, we've seen this one many times, and it's just being presented to us because now it is final. It has finally been made final.
Correct.
Can you just clarify that part where he said that if we mentioned something to put in there, it would definitely fail? I missed that. Could he repeat that for me, please?
Oh, sure. Thank you. I think that's Ms. Lang. I think that was
speaking. It is Ms. Lang.
So when we had a few years ago, when we had some changes made to our statute, and frankly, part of them were I had never proposed legislation before. So part of it was, to be in brutal honesty, was a learning experience for me. So if we wanted to do some things in the future. So back to your specific question, Ms. Lang. So when we approached our local state representative and local senators, in particular, our local state representative, and through staff, we had in one of the changes to change, and I don't recall obviously the exact language off the top of my head, but it was to allow additional opportunities for out-of-state recruitment. So if somebody wanted to come and work at the U of I Chicago Hospital, but they currently lived in Cleveland, they could make that application and at least start the process, you know, in order to go through and do that. Our at the time when we made that proposal, we were told that the legislative representative would not support that and was positive that others would also not support that as well. This also was at a time as we were still coming off, you know, some high unemployment. Part of the rationale was, you know, we have lots of people in Illinois that are unemployed. Why are you going to Iowa to find somebody to come work at one of our state-supported and state-sponsored universities? So whether that's a great idea or a terrible idea is, frankly, not for me to determine. What I can tell you is, at the moment, that was the thought process. And so I could either, you know, die on the hill, if you will, and leave it in there and lose, or I could take it out, and we took it out so that we can move on. So I'm sorry, Ms. Lang, that's probably way more of an explanation than you wanted, but nonetheless, that's what happened at that time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Executive Director. Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm losing all my spaces on here, Ms. Lang. Okay, if there's nothing else about agenda item number 8, we're going to move on to agenda item number 9, which is governance, risk and compliance audit program review and its recent activities. And it looks like we'll have a presentation by Lucinda, and I don't want to hatchet the last name. I think it's Neitzel. Is that close?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Merit Board members. I wanted to give you a brief update of our audit activities in recent months and since your previous meeting. We have resumed, of course, our normal audit operations with a revised and published schedule since being temporarily suspended for the COVID-19 pandemic.
I'm sorry, but somebody's making a lot of background noise. If everybody could mute, that'd be great. It's hard to hear. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Thanks, Ms. Smart. We did go ahead and reformulate the audit schedule for FY21 and 22, and it's been reformatted into more of a cluster fashion. And you have this new schedule in your audit material packet. It's also been posted at our public website as well. We have in your materials as well, you'll have executive summaries for the two audit reports that we have finalized over the past few months, Chicago State University, which was issued October 1st, and Eastern Illinois University, which was issued June 2nd. We do have a draft report pending for U of I Urbana, and we have 5 remote visits that we've conducted since August. So we did have a suspension between April and July, and quickly in July, we ramped up and got 5 remote visits done in a matter of a few months. So I did also want to let you know that we're actively engaged in several additional compliance activities, training and development of university HR staff, and other projects, of course, outside the scope of the routine audits and reporting requirements. We can give you a status report regarding those activities upon request. And I would like to go ahead and turn this over to Gail at this point, and she will pick up where I left off.
Thank you, Gail. You can proceed.
Thank you. As Cindy mentioned, there are additional materials behind your tab number 9, including in that is some executive summaries regarding the two audits for Eastern Illinois University and Chicago State University. We wanted to mention briefly Chicago State University's audit. It was particularly troublesome. Generally speaking, there are every single audit has findings. There's nothing unusual about that. This audit had 15 material findings, classification 1 findings, which is the most serious. There were 14 of those, 15 total findings. As a result of that, it was determined at the system office that the authority of the executive director that's typically delegated to the campus would be withdrawn in three areas from Chicago State: employment and layoff, creating or filling extra help appointments, and creating or filling principal administrative appointments, PAs. We discussed that with the campus. We came to pretty much an agreement about how that would work. We've developed calling it a schedule, it's putting too fine a point on it, but a remediation process so that eventually they can once again demonstrate competence in these areas. And once again, the executive director can delegate those reports back to the campus. The campus has, I am happy to report, dedicated resources to correct the deficiencies that are in the report. And, you know, I don't have a sense of how long it's going to take, but I believe we will get those deficiencies corrected and return the delegated authority back to the campus. Cindy, anything else from you?
No, ma'am. I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Jones, that's all we have for this, unless there are questions from the board.
Thank you. I was just going to pose that. It looks like Dr. Eagle has a question first, and then if anyone else will go after that. Dr. Eagle?
Hi. Thank you for going through that. When I read through the documentation, my only question, because this audit, I believe, went through November 2019, my sense is between 2019 and now, with the next audit, are we in the corrections that are planning to be made or adjustments? Will that be retroactive to past issues between 2019 and November 2019 and now? Or how is it going to be remedied?
It won't be retroactive. The new audit time frame will pick up where the old one left off, but we will certainly note in the audit that these rehabilitation activities are taking place. So it would be, we're not going to have the same kind and number of findings because we're already working on that.
My assumption is that these corrections are going to be put into practice immediately, anything found, even though they may have been still unremediated between November 2019 and now, even though they're...
Yes, you're correct. And so, you know, again, and we appreciate, you know, Chicago State, for lack of a better term, taking this amazingly, seriously and putting resources towards it. But so maybe it's easiest to answer with an example. So obviously each of our campuses have the ability to hire extra help employees. Those are temporary, employees that don't receive benefits and so on. We had concerns. One of the findings was a misuse of that particular program at Chicago State. And so there obviously is no way to go back, if you will, and correct that, because if somebody worked a longer period of time than was allowed by the rules or something, there's obviously no way to go back and correct it. The person worked and they were paid, and obviously we would not, there's no way to correct it. What we want to make sure going forward is that those procedures and the rules and the statute are followed so that the mistake doesn't happen again. And that's exactly where we're at, through training, through literally weekly discussions with the campuses to make sure as we move forward that then, as you talk about, those changes are happening on the fly, if you will. Literally every time something comes up, we are working with the campus to correct something or to approve something, if you will.
Okay, and then I just have one additional question. It was based on a line in the letter. It's the second to last paragraph on the second page. It is our hope and expectation that Chicago State University remains engaged moving forward, and as long as that continues, the university system will take the lead in assisting. I guess what my question was, what will happen? I'm sure this won't happen, but what would happen if they don't meet the expectation?
It's a great point. So the first thing, obviously, and as Ms. Zopp is their current merit board member, so obviously we would go to her, I guess I will say, more forcefully, if you will, than we already have. Though this has been very unfair to her because she came in really, really at the tail end of this. So she is frankly trying to play catch up. The next part would be obviously to come back to the board here and to really make recommendations of what would you like to do. Again, we have state statutes, and taken to the, you know, to the 100th degree, again, which I know, Dr. Eagle, is not where you're wanting to go, you know, there are penalties in our statute for not following the statute. And again, that's the 100th level of compliance, if you will. But that would be the ultimate thing to do. Certainly if we did not feel things were progressing, or if things were, for lack of a better term, and again, I even hate to say it this way because they're incendiary things of being hidden or not being provided to us. Certainly the OEIG and the Auditor General certainly also investigate these kinds of activities too, if there seems to be something happening. Again, that's the most incendiary thing I can say, and I apologize actually to Ms. Zopp for even mentioning it, but those would be the ultimate end game, if you will, if we just were not able to get cooperation. And that has not in any way been the case at this point.
And if I might add, those methods are certainly available, but they're deep in a folder, deep in a drawer.
Correct.
Any other questions, comments, concerns from the board regarding this matter? I don't see any. Gail, do you have something else for us, or Jeff,
on this particular
agenda item?
No, ma'am, I do not.
No, thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other issue, interest in discussion for this agenda item, we're going to move on to the next agenda item, which is item 10, which is the report of the executive director by Jeff Brownfield.
Thank you, Chair. And again, thank you all for your time today. So a couple of things too. catch you up on. Back in August, you all had approved a budget for us to move forward with the IBHE, which we did. We had requested at the time an increase in particular for some of our personnel costs, just to, again, a quick reminder, you know, our budget has been cut so severely over the past 20 years. Again, we have in actual dollars, we have about $100,000 less than we did in 1999. So we had about 1.2 million or thereabouts in 99, and we have 1.1 million or again thereabouts today. So we did ask to try and at least catch up to 1999. Again, as Amelia indicated, and as all of you have had, I'm sure, presentations at your campuses, the budget situation looks bleak at best. So we shall see. We were asked through the governor's office and through IBHE to submit information regarding budget reductions, and we have, of course, followed those requirements, and we have submitted that information here over the last month or 6 weeks or so to them. So we are waiting to hear back what kind of budget they will put forth for us, and we will start the process at that time. I know Teresa is going through budget books and budget information now and submitting it again to the governor's office and to Office of Budget and Management. That's all I have from a presentation, unless there's questions on budget.
Members of the board, any questions, concerns, comments for Executive Director Brownfield?
No, ma'am.
I don't see any.
Thank you. The next item was a compliance audit that we had performed by the Auditor General. And before I tick off a couple of things that are in your packet here, again, I want to publicly commend Teresa in particular, your board secretary. Teresa has been in charge of all things related to what the Auditor General looks at within our office, and has never had a material finding ever in her tenure here. So for decades, sorry Teresa, but for decades that Teresa's been here, our audits have not had any material findings. We did have a few immaterial findings. I put a few of the highlights in here for you to do that. So we will, you know, we will take the immaterial findings as was requested by the Auditor General. We will make whatever kind of recommendations or updates that they have requested. I know a couple of you are board chairs, and you have already received, for example, a letter from me that the Auditor General asked me to write, that they had concerns that you or your boards do not reappoint people to the merit board quickly enough. We tried to explain to them that there are a lot of processes that go into appointing someone to the merit board, including the simple fact that if somebody were to resign tomorrow from the merit board, your particular university board may not meet for 2 months. So there would be no way for you to appoint or elect someone for 2 months, no matter what happened, and so on. So there were a variety of those small things. Again, we've either corrected them or are correcting them. And again, I just want to say thank you to Teresa for, again, years and years and decades of all of the work that goes into that. As I think you all are aware, you know, we have to follow all the same state guidelines that your campuses do. I mean, we have to use the correct purchasing systems, and we have to do all of the things that everybody else has to do as well. There just is only, you know, 12 of us to do that. So anyway, any questions on the compliance audit or the immaterial findings?
Members, thank you, Executive Director Brownfield. Any questions, comments, concerns from members of the board regarding the audit? I see a bunch of head shaking, and I don't see any blue boxes, so I think we're good for you to proceed, Jeff.
So so for 10C of classification, again, we just try and kind of give you an overview of the thing that, again, Danielle Roof in our office, who is our classification manager, some of the things they're working on, just so you kind of have an idea of the different classifications that we are working on updating. Again, as you will recall from Amelia's presentation, looking at our classification structure and those kind of things. So this is the, you know, this is the groundwork, if you will, to update those classes, update the examinations, update the hiring processes, and so on. So again, it's just a listing for you to have.
I don't see anyone indicate. I don't see anyone indicating you have any questions, so I think you could go ahead and proceed, Jeff.
Great, thank you. So for the principal administrative appointment, again, we put a brief chart, a very small chart in your packet. There were only a couple of you that were actually on the board when we had made our procedural changes. And as you'll see in the far right-hand column, the PAA, or the academic professionals, as they're referred to at most of our campuses, as you see, we were having a decline in those positions. And those positions were being moved to civil service, or at least in a general sense they were, to do that. And you, what you will see, though, at the very bottom of that, the last 2 years, the 2019 and 2020, you will see actually a somewhat significant increase of about 1,200 positions. And, of course, at first we were very concerned about that particular situation. And Bob Curry, our IT manager, working with all of the campus representatives, there had been some misreporting or miscategorizing of some positions or some positions that just weren't had not been included for many, many years. And so we went back to try and correct that. And so even though there is a significant number increase or uptick, if you will, which, again, by numbers gives us some grave concern, it is our belief and it is all but certain those positions existed before. They were just reported incorrectly, unfortunately. So starting in June, am I correct, Bob? I think starting in June, we were getting those reports corrected.
March,
June. This is the September data. And, of course, we'll be getting December data coming up soon. So anyway, that's why there is there's some oddity to those numbers.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any questions, concerns about the information that was presented by Executive Director? I see a question from Ms. Smart.
Yeah, so I have, so the numbers, and if you said this and it like went in one ear and out the other, I'm sorry. Okay. So I, because as you know, like I've spent so much time on this, right? So, you know, obviously the PAAs are coming down, you know, and going to civil service, but how much of that is from conversions, right, versus we're just, you know, PAAs have left. Maybe we didn't refill the spot, you know, exactly as it is, you know, because you could get these numbers without really applying anything that we did just by, you know, having a different job description. Is that my question making sense?
It does make sense. And there is not, you know, without requesting our campuses to spend inordinate amounts of hours, if you will, to try and make those determinations. These are relatively simple headcount numbers. And what I will so tell
what's
you-
What's your gut though? Or what do you hear from the HR directors?
My gut is that there is definitely a significant amount of work that is being done on the campus to convert positions at all of our campuses. I know, again, I keep kind of coming back to Amelia, for example, but I know in speaking with her here a few months ago, they had any position they were doing, actually, I guess it's been approximately a year ago, they converted all of their positions kind of at one time, if you will. So, or all the ones that they had identified, obviously, again, Ms. Smart, again, as you said, you've spent countless hours on this particular topic over many years. So our sense is that the campus is doing that. You know, things never go as quickly as any of us ever want to do. We totally understand that. Certainly since March, there's no way to, you know, it's made things just that much more difficult with the remote work and those kind of things. But my sense is that the campuses have taken this seriously, has taken, again, in particular, okay, Smart, your concern seriously and are trying to work on this issue.
Thank you. That's all I needed.
Yep.
Any other questions, comments, concerns about this topic? Jeff, you can go ahead and proceed.
Okay. So the last thing under my report, and we just want to try and make things a little bit easier. And I know, you know, it's, you know, remote meetings and all of those things are hard enough as they are, but in the past we had tried to kind of block out a time. We had tried to, as best we could, kind of guess, well, if there's one or two discharge cases, obviously those are the things oftentimes that make, that take the most time to do things. So we tried to kind of block off time, and we had a couple concerns expressed over, gosh, probably the last year or maybe more of, you know, blocking off time and then if the meeting ran long or those kind of things. So we had tried this time just to kind of put a start time, but no end time. And then a couple of people were concerned, well, when do you kind of think it will end? Because I have some other meetings, I have some other engagements, I need to make sure that I can either schedule or not schedule. So the question really is, really to you, Chair Jones, and then obviously to the board, you know, we can do, we will do absolutely 100% whatever you would like to do. We will, again, we'll try and best we can guess the time, we'll do that, we'll have a start time. We can block a huge amount of time. We can do, say, 1 o'clock to, you know, 5 o'clock or something so that, if you will, your all afternoon in a technical sense is blocked off. We don't, again, we're here to, you know, we work for you. We're here anyway. So we will do what's best, again, Chair, for you. And, again, maybe you can ask the other board members or take a straw poll or something how you would like for us to do it. We just don't want to cause confusion.
Thank you, Director Brownfield. I see Ms. Smart has a question, comment.
Yeah. I, for one, cannot live in a world where I don't know what time a meeting's going to end. I'm fine if a meeting ends early. Like, I'm cool with that. I would never say, oh, you wasted my time or you blocked time that I didn't use, because I can always fill it. But I can't, because now what I would have to do is, like, block off the whole afternoon. So I would suggest if we say it's going to be, we would never go over 3 hours, then let's set it for 3 hours or 2.5 hours. But I, for one, cannot, like, go live with meetings that have an indefinite time frame.
Thank you for that. Thank you for their feedback. And I have a tendency to agree with that. And again, it seems like a short time, but a long time on the board at the same time. So I don't think I've ever been, since I've been on the board, been in a meeting that's been longer than 3 hours. I think most of them have, since I've had my tenure on the board, been 2 hours. And so, and I think that most of us know that if a board meeting is 2 hours and we see a lot, if we see a lot of discharge actions, then we may need that, know that we will need more time. And I'm looking at all of the board members who I can see for feedback on this. But it seems like 2 hours, or even as Ms. Smart said, 3 hours might be sufficient to just have that be the blocked out time, understanding that we may finish early. And I don't know of anybody who's ever complained because we finished a meeting early, especially if it's on Zoom or WebEx. And if it has to go a little bit longer, but if we've taken care of the action items that require board vote, those would typically have probably taken place toward the beginning of the meeting. So that if someone needs to leave, you know, maybe that can happen. So is there anyone else from the board that has some feedback on there? This a preference? I think that saying 3 hours might be a good, you know, a good starting point, because I don't think we've had any since I've been here that have been longer than that.
This is Naomi. I agree that 3 hours does seem like plenty to, you know, let's say we'll meet from 1 to 4. And my experience on the board is maybe that happened once that we had, you know, gone that long or a little bit longer. So we don't usually even go that long, but I understand it's really important to block out the time for all of us, so that we know what's on our agenda that day. I mean, I had another meeting today that I said, nope, I can't make it. And I'm sure we all have those kinds of situations. So I think blocking out 3 hours is a good plan.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobson. Dr. Eagle, I saw that you wanted to chime in at some point.
Yeah, I think it's great, the 3 hours. I mean, it's our devotion to this work. But I've always said, please try to avoid university meeting dates. But I know there's so many universities here, so it just may not be able to happen. But if possible,
yeah, it's hard to miss. Dr. Eagle, you saying that, we have tried. I know in the schedule that we sent out, and I think we'll talk about it here in just a second or so, we did try and go out and look at each campus Board of Trustee dates, and we tried to. I think there was one, I think, Dr. Eagle, that I think literally at the time we did it a few weeks ago, it wasn't posted, and now it is posted. So we do, unfortunately, run across that. Mr. Butler, for example, today was... that was his situation. He had a board meeting today. So we will try to, you know, if we can get everybody, obviously that's the best, but if, or at least as far as a Board of Trustee meeting, but we will try and make sure that we only do as best we can to do that. So thank you for that. Thank you for that comment. That is what I know Teresa and Jen had tried to do for the proposed times.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions, comments, feedback from other board members regarding that? And thank you so much for joining us after your board meeting. I saw you pop in, so I'm sorry that you missed the bulk of this, but thank you for joining us even for the time you have for us. So thanks. We appreciate that. I know best intentions, you know, you look at your schedule and then it seems like you blink and you look at it 30 minutes later and something's changed. So any other feedback on that item? So I think that if we can get some head nods or some hands, I think 3 hours seems like it would be more than sufficient. We certainly don't want to go any further than that. And then I definitely think that if we finish up early, everybody's okay with that. And those who are not, they can feel free to either stay in the meeting room or stay on the WebEx or the Zoom until it's over. Okay. Did you have anything else, Executive Director Brownfield?
No, I think going ahead, Chair, and you can move on with your agenda if you'd like.
Okay. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is item number 11, which is a report of legal counsel by Gail Scheifer.
So primarily my legal work is about discharges. You see those as they come through, and there's a brief summary on at tab 11 in your materials. We have 3 pending cases in circuit courts throughout the state. The first was filed in 2017 as a result of a director's review. It is presently under general continuance. I spoke recently to the Assistant Attorney General. They are seeking, or will be seeking shortly, dismissal for want of prosecution in that matter. I'll keep the board updated. The second is you'll think of it as the electrician test case. We had what we allege as one of our applicants, we allege stole part of a test or attempted to cheat on a test in Madison County. That case is still pending. There has been a lot of COVID-related closures in Madison County. That case is next up in February 2020. But presently, the court there is closed, so I don't know that February is going to be a firm date. I'll, again, keep the board updated. The third matter was a discharge finished by this board in earlier in 2019. The employee was discharged by the board. She filed a petition for administrative review. Took about a year to conclude. She failed to appear at the hearing she requested, and the judge has dismissed that matter, and it is now concluded. And I don't have anything else for the board. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Any questions, comments, concerns from members of the board regarding the legal report?
I have a question. It's not necessarily about these things. I have a question about the case that we discussed earlier today, just from a legal perspective. So one, you guys can deal with why the attorney didn't, ask to be part of that. But two, did we follow all rules? If he was speaking as a public speaker, are we really allowed to have asked him questions? I don't know the answer to that. Julie, you're saying yes?
Pardon me. Oh, no, I see somebody. John, I'm sorry, Mr. Simmons.
Yeah, yes. I was just saying we moved him to point of the meeting where he was speaking as to the claim. So it was fine to do it that way.
And I think that either way, wherever he presented, the board always has the freedom to ask any questions that we want to ask anyone who presents in front of us. Is that not your understanding, board counsel?
That is my understanding, Chair.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because you know me, I like to ask questions, but I didn't know if we could do that, if it was a public speaker or not.
We could, and I think that we might add some clarity to that. I mean, sometimes, and Gail may be able to speak to this, but if they think the other side is going to speak, then they might want to save some time to speak. If the other side sometimes misses their time to speak or to petition us to speak when appropriate, and they think they may come in under comments, then they may want to come under comments as well. So sometimes that's strategic. I might not have anything to say, but if I think you're going to have something to say and you missed it and you come in on comments, I want my bite at the apple too. So sometimes that's where I found that happens, even on our regular board for the campus.
And if I could just add to that, I would caution this board on the finance for the public speaking on the questions that you ask there, then that cuts their time, they think anyway. So they want to, and if you don't stay 5 minutes, I've been in these meetings where there's been three or four or five speakers and everybody winds up getting 12, 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden the 3 hours we set aside isn't enough. So I would just caution us to stick to the public speaking section. Let's stick to the 5 minutes and try everything you can with your questions. But like today, when we moved him to the point of the meeting where kind of he belonged, you know, with the fact at issue, I thought that was fine. But anyway, that's enough.
I just didn't know if he didn't follow the protocol for asking to be part of that discussion, you know, kind of why he gets to show up and be part of it if he didn't do what he was supposed to do. That was just my.
And I think as a rule, or just as a matter of protocol, most of the time there are people who want to be on the agenda, have a time frame to be on the agenda. And sometimes they do try to slide in through public comments because the only time frame for public comments is to do it before the meeting convenes. So.
Thank you.
And if I may, the rule allowing parties to address the board indicates that there needs to be a novel idea presented during that argument. In this case, I suspect that there wasn't anything particularly novel about Mr. Jones' argument. He was just reiterating, and that's perfectly allowable under public comment. But there was no new position or anything novel in legal terms about his an argument. And that's, I think that is why a careful reading of the rule by counsel suggested that he didn't fit under the rule.
Thank you, board counsel, for adding that as well. Any other questions, concerns about anything that board counsel has presented or anything that she can assist us with at this time? Okay, not seeing anything, we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is agenda item number 12, which is the consideration of the 2021 schedule of meeting of the Merit Board. Thank you for getting the corrections out on the year. I saw that, and I figure with all the esteemed members of this board, someone else would see it as well. And to see the fine-tooth comb that we had Ms. Jacobson go over our minutes with. Now I'm even more confident that that would happen. So we can move to the next item, please.
Thank you.
Okay, so do we need to take a vote on these, Executive Director Brown, to see if these are okay, or this is
okay,
just...
I'm looking at the paper copy, so I don't see the dates.
We got sent an update for those because the dates were off because they said 2020 in the one that we received in our book.
Can someone resend those to me? Because I don't recall that.
Didn't we get those, or am I making that up?
No,
Us. Maybe they were sent. They were dropped on the Dropbox.
I can't get into the Dropbox. There's some tech issue, so I can't get in.
I'm sorry about that. When things are dropped on the Dropbox, I get email, so I forget whether or not I got it emailed or Dropbox to me.
Yeah, so if someone could email me the dates.
Will you please read the dates?
I'm going to read
them. Yeah, please read the dates. I think that settles. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure.
Executive Director Brownfield, are you going to read the dates for us or someone there? I'm sorry. I thought I heard that.
I got it, Jeff.
Oh, you got it? Okay, you got
okay
it.
Cool.
Sorry. I turned to the wrong page. Thank you, Gail.
Thursday, February 25, 2021.
I'm sorry. Can you say that again? I can't hear you.
Yes, ma'am. Thursday, February 25, 2021.
What time?
All of them are at 1 o'clock.
At 1? Okay.
So they're all on Thursday. They're all at 1. May 13, 2021. August 19, 2021. November 17, 2021.
No, that's not correct. November 18.
I'm sorry, November 18.
So again, thank you, Gail. So to reiterate what Gail said there on Thursdays, because I think when we tried to do a consensus of this earlier in the year, maybe it was last year, who knows now what year it was. I think it was Thursdays, the date that was most, the board members were available, and 1 o'clock was the time that most board members were available. So all of these are Thursdays at one. The dates for the first three didn't change. They just had the wrong year on them. And the one for November did change. It was a day off.
November is the University of Illinois board meeting is on November 18th.
Okay.
17th and 18th, I should say.
Yeah. And so is NEIU's.
So it looks like the November day. Anyone else on the board have any conflicts that they know of with these dates with their boards, their own boards? Dr. Eagle?
Yeah, I won't be there on the 17th either.
It's because of the 18th, Dr. Eagle.
What?
It's the 18th, not the 17th.
We'll go back. Outside of that date, we'll go back and review that one more time. But the February, May, and August dates.
Sorry.
And we'll double check the. Oops. We'll double check on the other.
Mr. Butler, do any of your meetings conflict with these dates now? Just because we moved this one?
I'm not entirely sure. I have to confess, I hadn't yet put the NIU board dates in my calendar. So I'm checking the November meeting date. Seems like that's about when we have our meetings. So...
Thank you. And it looks like November is the one that's going to be moved. And you're not by yourself in confessing you haven't put in your New Year's dates in. I haven't either, but ours are all on Friday.
Yeah, our board always meets on Thursday. So there's a potential for conflict in just about every case. But I will, I'll figure it out. Adapt.
Any other feedback, any of the other board members? Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Eagle. Okay, so you went on mute. Any other conflict from any of the other board members that you're aware of from your board? Okay, if not, it sounds like, Jeff, that we're okay, possibly maybe the other Thursdays for Mr. Butler, but everything seems okay except from that November date.
Okay, all right, we will take another look at it. Also, Teresa and I actually were just talking about that just before we started. That's right around also, I think Thanksgiving is a little bit earlier this year or this coming 21, I think. So we'll double check and we will get a new date of that out. Or anyway, we'll check. We'll figure it out.
Okay. So do just procedurally, do we need to vote on these dates right now? Or is this just an informational for the office to try to work something out for us as a schedule?
They need to vote.
Yes, okay. You'll need to vote, and I think because of it being that kind of action, Teresa, I think we need a roll call. No, don't need a roll call. Okay. Just a voice vote, Chair, is all we need.
Okay, so I need a motion, and we probably need to, if you're going to make the motion, you probably need to strike November since we know that one doesn't work. So if we could have a motion for the other three dates and then a second, and then we can vote.
I move that we have the first three dates be on our calendar, and we change the November one.
Thank you, Ms. Smart. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Ms. Jacobson. Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify with aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you. Okay, the final item on our agenda for today, I guess, is room for if anyone has any other items they want to present that we have not covered today before we adjourn for the day.
I'd like to wish everyone a happy holiday.
Thank you. I saw Ms. Smart. Ms. Smart?
I would like to say that our chair has done a phenomenal job. Thank you so much. This was a really well-run meeting. Excellent job.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I try. I'm over here with all my notes.
And happy holidays.
Thank you. Anyone else have any other questions, concerns, comments? I'm glad to see everyone safe and well. It really is good. You know, I know we have all these Zooms and WebExes, but it does do me good to actually see a face and know that everyone is, you know, still hanging in through all of this. So I'm glad for all of that. I hope all of your families have been safe and well. Do we have anything else from our office down there in Urbana?
I don't believe we have anything else to present unless there's someone on the board chair that has another comment or question that they may like to add.
Okay. Seeing none, this completes our business for today. I would now ask for a motion and a second to adjourn.
Ms. Simmons, so moved.
Okay. Mr. Simmons, I have a motion from you. I have a second from, I guess it was Ms. Jacobson, or I think anybody will take credit for that second. all those in favor signify with aye.
Aye.
We officially adjourn this meeting at 2:43 p.m. Thank you, everyone. Have a good holiday and look forward to seeing you all in February.